This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5.
Mark Kermode in fine fettle then, sorting through all the emails. You're going to do box office top 10. I thought, yeah. Right, the ones on No Country, I'll wait until we get to that point in the top 10 where No Country is, yeah. And then I can read them then. And it's not there. It's not anywhere in the at all.
Yes.
Which is quite astonishing, isn't it, given the week that it's just had?
It must be to do with... Well, it's been around for a little bit now, hasn't it? And it's to do with the fact that it's probably playing in the smaller cinemas now.
Anyway, so we'll do the top 10, we'll do as much of your correspondence as possible. Alvin and the Chipmunks at 10.
I laughed. I'd be lying if I said I didn't.
Cloverfield at 9.
I trembled a little bit, although it was 20 minutes before the killing and gratuitous filth started.
The Bucket List at 8.
Not enough killing and gratuitous filth with people running around with chainsaws, sadly.
There Will Be Blood at 7.
Well, you know, I think it's great. I think that in a way, Paul Thomas Anderson would have been a more deserving Best Director winner. But, you know, we did correctly. I think both you and I did correctly predict that it was going to be No Country and the Coens. Because actually...
I just agreed with you.
Yeah, but that movie has... Was that what it was? Yeah, you were just saying whatever he says.
Yeah.
Because that movie has a more mainstream feel to it. But by the fourth time of watching it, did take four runs, I was absolutely of the opinion that There Will Be Blood is, you know, should have been the best film winner.
Lee from Liverpool, this is related to this movie plus the subject which we've done for the last couple of weeks on unsuitable date movies. I recently agreed to see There Will Be Blood with my girlfriend of 6 months, though upon hearing Kermode's quiveringly positive review, temptation got the better of me, and following your advice, I saw it alone.
Oh, good man.
In an 11 a.m. showing.
Excellent.
At my local provincial.
Please tell me this email has a happy ending.
After telling my girlfriend, deciding that honesty was the best policy, of my guilty indulgence, she refused to speak to me for a week. Though I tried to convince her that was the way Mark Kermode said I should see it, she didn't quite seem to sympathise. Still, it was worth it, says Lee. Keep up the wittertainment. So you might be responsible for the breakup of a relationship. He doesn't say whether he bought the 5 seats, but...
No, I'm very sorry. And if... What was his girlfriend's name?
It doesn't mention.
Well, that's okay, fine, but no.
Maybe that says all that you need to say.
No, but I think it is perfect. It is one of the few occasions in which going on your own is justified, and for everybody, for both parts of the partnership.
This from John. I saw There Will Be Blood last night and agree that it's one of the finest movies of the year. I'm still not sure, though, what The Good Doctor means when he says it redefines the language of cinema. I didn't feel I was watching anything so completely revolutionary. It would be nice to hear a little more. Well, we did a bit of this last week. So, because you keep repeating this line in a couple of sentences, it is revolutionary because
from where I was sitting an hour in, I didn't know where it was going. It didn't have any recognisable story arc, as the Hollywood term is. What it was doing was the way in which the scenes were edited, the construction of the scenes did not seem to follow the usual rhythmical grammar of modern cinema. I mean, I was genuinely to the point that I was so completely thrown the first time. An hour in, I didn't know what was going on. Now, it may be that somebody who's more open-minded than me, of which there are apparently many,
more open-minded than you,
yeah, wouldn't have quite such a strong reaction. But having just, you know, having done nothing but watch films and films and films, you know, for months and months and months, it really was like somebody, you know, reinventing the wheel. It's like that moment when it was like that moment when the people who were designing the Mini went, you know what, let's make it a transverse engine, and everyone went, eh? It's like that.
Right. Thanks for that. A lot of these repetitious, I do believe. So let's, just on that, on your fun and games at the top of the hour, Marcus, yeah. Tremendous spat between Julian and the Good Doctor. Could we have them swap for a few weeks? Kermo could sort out some of the dullards in Parliament, and Julian could give his outlook on the evils of modern cinema, which is an interesting and intriguing idea. Anyways, The Water Horse, Legend of the Deep. Big David Morrissey film at 6.
Yeah, I mean, we like David Morrissey. I took my kids to see it. They enjoyed it very much. I mean, it is everything that's in it is in the trailer. And, you know, it's the main hero does have to contend with saying jings a lot, which is just a hop, step and a jump away from saying hoots. Donald, where's your trousers?
But, National Treasure, Book of Secrets at 5.
You know, as I said, there's an Indiana Jones movie coming. National Treasure is just a stopgap. Nothing much more than that.
We have Juno at 4.
I loved it. I see that finally, after how long has it been out in the cinemas? For like a couple of months. Finally, I turned up on the poster. Everybody else, I mean, everyone has been quoted on the poster of Juno. Finally, on the new.
What do you say on the poster?
Oh, I don't know. Like, you know, it's really, really funny or something.
Something brilliant.
Something equally brilliant like that. And it was Jack, like, they got rid of everybody else. Now let's see what he says.
Jack in Sussex says, "Dear Groucho and Harpo, I went to see Juno for the second time this week. I absolutely loved the film, but the majority of the audience were very young. I should imagine that they were all..."
It's a 12 certificate.
"All above the 8 years appropriate for the 12A certificate. But this film has repeated scenes of, quote, moderate sex. Is that a reference to the quantity or quality? So-called adult themes and at least one use of the F word. Surely this film is going to go well over the heads of most such children. I think 12-year-olds will be fine for this film, but not really for many lower. Perhaps the BBFC should consider a return of the 12 certificate for some films and the continuation of the 12A for others." Well, which is quite an interesting option to have 12 and a 12A.
It is, and funnily enough, the BBFC have considered it. I mean, as you know, I think the one area in which the BBFC have slightly been wrong-footed is in the area of the 12A. They assumed that parents would be much more stringent about what they took their kids to, and they were quite frankly shocked when that didn't appear to be the case. And there are people who would argue quite sensibly for exactly that, have a 12 and a 12A. In relation to the F word in Juno, unless I'm mistaken, I think what she says is Phuket, Thailand, which is now actually quoted on the poster. There may be another instance of it, but I think that's the one which keeps sort of being referred to. And I agree. I mean, I think you need to be 12 to get a handle on that film. I would be uncomfortable about people younger than that seeing it.
We have Rambo at 3.
Horrible, evil, hideous, nasty, stupid piece of work. As you know, Sylvester Stallone said, I wouldn't go back and do that. It would just be stupid. It was so much worse. Although it's absolutely terrific. If you go on that, you know when you can see the vodcast on, is it called YouTube? Yeah?
Yes.
And then people can write what they think about the thing.
Yes.
And there's like 50 comments of people saying, "Oh, I loved it. How dare you? It's fine. So clearly there are many people out there who disagree with my analysis that it is, but it is. It's just abhorrent.
And if you like us with pictures, the lights are on, so we are being streamed.
Did we get streamed when I was talking to what's his name with
Julian Brazier?
Because I honestly could have seen
he wasn't being
steam
streamed.
Coming out of my ears.
Yeah, it was just you. So it wasn't exactly a balanced streaming.
No.
Be Kind rewinds at 2.
You know, I like it more than other critics, but obviously the public have sort of taken to it. It's a good, fun, light-hearted Michel Gondry movie. It's not up there with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and he has yet to work again with Mr. Kaufman in order to do some really, really fine work. He's not as good a screenwriter as he is a director, but it's a lot easier ride than The Science of Sleep.
And the UK's number one is still Jumper.
For the goalposts.
That's a TV reference.
Very good. And so, you know, hey, Hayden Christensen, he couldn't act in those Star Wars prequels. He can't act in Jumper. It's like a Tomorrow People episode, but with a bit more money thrown at it. It's directed by Doug Liman. And it makes this terrible mistake, which is that imagining that just because Hayden Christensen was in Star Wars, he'll be charismatic and enigmatic enough to carry off a feature film. You know what? He's not.
On the subject of parents and movies, Bill... It just says Dor. I imagine that must be Dorset, mustn't it? And he just got cut off on the text. Anyway, Doctors Mayo and
Cut off on a text?
Well, it's just Dor. I don't know. He just ran out of symbols.
Okay.
Doctors Mayo and Kermit, I'm 44 this year. In this time, my father has only been to the cinema once. Huh. So that's once in 44 years, and that was to see Crocodile Dundee. His verdict, that wasn't very realistic.
Although it has got that thing, that's not a knife, this is a knife.
Okay, so I think we need some suggestions for Bill.
Okay, what's the other great line in
Bill's
Crocodile
dad,
Dundee?
What should he go and see? If he hasn't been to see anything since Crocodile Dundee, what would be the perfect follow-up?
What's the other great line in Crocodile Dundee?
Can't remember any.
It's for washing your... Remember when he sticks his head on his discovery? Well, that's it. That's the only two bits of that film I remember.
We got loads of texts and emails about MPs and censorship. But go on. No, worse for another day.
No. Just
Andy in Swindon, this is nothing more than new Labour-esque nannyism. Although I think
he was a Tory, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Typical thought police rubbish. Yeah. Anyway, more importantly, far more to the point, some movie reviews. Squeeze one in before the half past.
Should we do a very, very quick one? Because it's because it's we've only got three Stephen Schwarzenegger. Let's do very quickly Semi-Pro. Semi-Pro is the new Will Ferrell movie. And I think that the way Will Ferrell movies work is this.
Is it the same as the last Will Ferrell movie?
It is exactly the same as the last one. It's like, you know, they've done Talladega Nights, they've done ice skating, they've done that, they've done Anchorman, and they said, well, what are we going to do? I know, so we'll do, well, whatever we do, we've got to make it 70s, because that way he can get to wear the afro wig and get to have the big sideburns and get to wear the tight pants. And the gig is here that he's somebody who once had a hit single called Love Me Sexy, and then he had some money and he bought a semi-pro basketball team, and now they're going down the toilet, and he's their manager. And so he get, basically what it is, it's like, okay, Will, put on the afro, put on the tash, put on the sideburns, do some shouting. Then there's a really funny scene, Will, in which we're going to put the camera really low on the ground and you're going to bend down in tight white shorts, and the audience will look at your bottom and they'll just fall out of their chairs. And it's interesting because I find Will Ferrell quite worrying. He's got that kind of, you know, I mean, I can't talk, but he's got that sort of face is too tight for in the art, in, like that, in that way that when he smiles, he reminds you of kind of, you know, there's something really creepy about it. It's not funny. It's like, yeah. And occasionally,
what's it like again?
It's like, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And occasionally, that creepiness has been used quite well. But here, you're just meant to sort of feel, hey, it's Will. He's showing us his bottom in tight white. So that's hilariously funny. And it was interesting because the whole movie, not one laugh, not one chortle, not one snigger, not one nothing. I mean, it was like, you know, being a kind of a mortician's convention.
Was there a titter?
No, there wasn't even a titter. There was
Is the titter slightly lower than...
With chortle first, titter. Snigger is kind of slightly snidey, isn't it?
What's the lowest form of laughter then?
Well, guffaw is a big one. What's it when you go... That's a cough, really. I did harumph, though. I definitely did at one point. Oh, for heaven's sake.
Well, that's clearly on a different scale altogether.
Yeah, yeah, it is. That's kind of like you've gone through not reacting and gone into that. It's not funny. Not funny.
On the subject of laughing at people's bottoms in tight white shirts.
Shorts.
And shorts.
Tight white shirts would be funny.
If that's all there is, we're in trouble when we do that Sport Relief Mile.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Do you remember
Mile?
That? Is it Mile or 3 miles?
As 7. It's come down very rapidly, hasn't it?
Anyway,
if it's a mile, we'll do it as a sprint and I'll beat you.
We're going to be doing it, I have to say, in a location which is famous in the history of British cinema. And we're going to be reviewing films at the same time.
I'll pay good money to see you pair run.
In tight white shirts?
Yeah, and shorts, preferably.
Do you reckon?
I'm not doing shorts. I'm going to run in my suit.
More detail.
No,
I'm flip-flops.
I'm running in my suit and flip-flops. I am not putting on shorts. Okay.
If you would like to support our exploits, however far we go and whatever we're wearing, you can...
Join us in casualty afterwards.
Exactly. Give a donation to Sport Relief. You can click on the links on either this programme's page or the Sport Relief part of the Five Live website, and it'll explain how you give money. And that'll do, I think. It could be 1 mile, it could be 3 miles. We could be enjoying it so much we're going to do 26.
I did do 7. Have I told you this?
Yes, you have at great length.
I was good.
Favourite double bill from a previous conversation, but the favourite double bill, Alex in West Yorkshire sent in a whole bunch of movies to see together, but Bambi and the Deer Hunter
very good.
Was my favourite.
On DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is Five Live.
Stephen in Horsham on the double bill thing. At university, I went to see a late night double bill of Something Wicked This Way Comes, followed by Splash. Half the audience walked out 10 minutes into Splash, unable to take the radical change in tone from nightmare to fairy tale. My girlfriend and I stayed and enjoyed both movies. Something Wicked appears to have disappeared off the face of the earth, which is a shame, as Jonathan Pryce and Jason Robards were, if memory serves, excellent.
No, it's Something Wicked is generally well regarded. It turns up on television, and it was certainly on video. Whether or not it's on DVD, the oddest things aren't on DVD. It turns out the David Cronenberg movie M. Butterfly isn't on DVD, which I was shocked to hear. But Something Wicked is definitely well regarded.
Jack in Guildford, it's coming a little late to the party, but I saw No Country last night and was ready for what people had told me was a great film ruined by a bad ending. I've no idea what they were talking about. The film was the best I have ever seen in the cinema, not least because it didn't wimp out and had an ending that was perfectly in line with its dark tone, pace and themes. Love the podcast, and when I have time to watch on Friday, love the webcam show. It's not really a show we're putting on, really, is it? We're just sitting here talking.
Yes, I know.
Pazzazzy.
No, and every time I look over there at the clock, I get told that I'm mugging for the cameras, which according to some magazine, I got particularly cross about.
How about a particularly fine review,
Doctor? How about, before we do anything else, hello to Jason Isaacs.
How about that?
But just because I realised that after we'd brought him in, the week after, we didn't do it. It was like one of those really...
You might think we'd gone off him.
Yeah, I know, and I don't want him to think that. So just hello to Jason Isaacs. Great. So, the bank job, right? Oh,
that
blimey!
That gap, by the way, was just so that he could reply.
He can,
people
yeah.
wondering what on earth was going on.
Exactly. And Jason, if you're listening, nobody else heard that. It's just in your head. So, the bank job. It's this sort of leery, geezerish British crime pic, apparently based on a true story of the walkie-talkie robbery. The walkie-talkie robbery is so named because whilst breaking into safety deposit boxes on their walkie-talkies, the crims were overheard by a shortwave or longwave or broadband, it wasn't broadband back then, enthusiast who heard them going, cool, blimey, get the ready, stick him in the boot and do a runner for it. For daily, he's all right, chim-chiminy. So, Jason Statham, who's a right old geezer, plays Terry. He's the sort of the linchpin, and he is doing a job that he's been sort of directed towards by his very, very posh friend, Saffron Burrows.
So how come you got the inside dope on this place, Martin?
She knows this bloke. Runs a security company.
Bloke? Is it serious? Are you getting married?
He is married. All the best ones are. Here we go. Marylebone Road and Baker Street. On the corner here is the bank. Next door is the Chicken Inn and at 189 Le Sac. And the back here is an underground car park with direct access to the shop's basement. We can pull in here from Glentworth Street into the car park for drop-offs and pick-ups without being seen from the street.
We'll dig a tunnel from the basement of the shop under the Chicken Inn and pop up in the safe deposit vault.
I've got a question. What do Wustock know about digging tunnels?
Nothing. But I know a man who does. So what do you reckon, Bambus?
What do I reckon? I reckon I know you guys, but I don't know her.
Don't worry about Martine. She's solid. We go way back.
Terry, you have been up to some mischief in your time. But this, don't you think it's a little out of your league?
Maybe it's time we stepped up to the first division.
Mm. It sounds like it's all going to go a bit custard, doesn't it? I mean, really, I wouldn't trust her because, frankly, you know, it's Saffron Burrows, isn't it? I've seen her before, and then Mike, Mike Figgisfield.
Was Madonna's husband involved in this anyway?
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. In fact, I don't know what Guy Ritchie is doing anymore because ever since that hideous revolver thing, he seems to have just gone away. I mean, if we're
Vinnie
lucky,
Jones
forever. No, and you do keep expecting Danny Dyer, but no.
It's been a long time since we had that impression.
I know it has, and I've been dying to because. Because I saw Danny Dyer on stage in a Harold Pinter play. And the funny thing was, he was actually pretty good. It's a monosyllabic role in which he says almost nothing, but he does very little, but he does it very well. And there is no point at which he goes to the front of the stage and goes, oh, Danny Dyer, oh! So there was, I take back some of what I said about him.
People might have just turned up at this play just to have that.
I know. Well, when I realised it was Danny Dyer on stage, I was in the, you know, the duck and cover position. But I have to say, he acquitted himself. I hated the play. I thought the play stank, but I thought Danny Dyer was pretty good in it. This is written by Clement and Lafrenet, the famous TV scriptwriters, which kind of explains, for some reason, why it sounds a little bit like porridge. You do keep expecting to hear the word naff. Because didn't naff come from porridge originally? Am I right in thinking
I've got no idea. I might look it up in the...
naff
if I look
off.
Distracted.
I think that might be right. I think the expression naff off actually comes from porridge. I think they made it up so they could use that word in the radio. But it's directed by Roger Donaldson, who is an interesting guy. He's a New Zealand filmmaker who made things like Smash Palace and Sleeping Dogs, which at one point really put, new independent New Zealand cinema on the map. Most recently, he did World's Fastest Indian, with Sir Anthony Hopkins. And he's a perfectly workaday director, and he has some serviceable ideas, and he takes this story and he kind of puts it together, and everything's in the right. And so you're torn that tab A goes into slot B, but it does look like a kind of oddly stuck together 70s TV sitcom that should have Ronnie Barker in Brilcombe. You are now looking up naff off, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Jason Statham is his lead man. See, here's the thing with Jason Statham. If you go on the internet, you remember in that discussion that we had before that was being referred to about the scene from Irreversible? If you go on the internet and you look up Jason, you Google Jason Statham, one of the things that Jason Statham is most famous for is that in one of his movies, and I'm pretty sure it's Transporter, there's a sequence in which Jason Statham strips to the waist and then has a wrestling match with a man in some oil. Now, the reason, the sort of the plot reason for the oil being there is really kind of never fully explained. It's like, why is he taking his shirt? Why? I mean, obviously, the answer is so that we can watch Jason Statham, who's, very well built, and he's got that kind of skinhead cut. And, if you're of a certain persuasion, Jason Statham covered in oil, wrestling might be something that you're interested in. And I was researching this when Eastern Promises came up, because there's that scene with Viggo Mortensen and the naked wrestling in the bathhouse.
Which you do seem particularly taken with.
And I loved it, absolutely loved it. And I went on the intro interweb and put in Jason Statham oil wrestling, and you'd be amazed at how many sites are interested in that and how many other sites they'd like to direct you to of what shall be referred to as specialist interest. But you don't get any of that in the bank. You just get Jason Statham doing the sort of geezery stuff. The twist here is meant to be that the reason that they're set up to do the bank job is that, in fact, one of the boxes they have to get contains some right royal snapshots of a right royal personality being right royally involved in a right royally bad way. Blimey. And you know what? This is true, sort of. They kind of made, well, they got it. So that bloke down the pub, he was called Ernie the Snout. He said he knew it because he knew it off a fellow who worked down Hackney Market. And so you go, okay, fine. So the central thing is this completely fatuous idea that there are these royal pictures that have been actually behind it all is MI6. I mean, you do kind of half expect Mohammed Al-Fayed to turn up and say, exactly, you see, I told you I wrote the plot for that. And it's messy and all over the place, and it's nothing to write home about, and it's not very good. But in a week in which things are very terrible indeed,
yes,
its level of staggering mediocrity is nothing like as bad as it would be in other weeks.
Do you know the London accent I'd like to have back is whoever it was who was in the crow's nest on the Titanic.
He went, iceberg!
No, it was
blimey!
Like, blimey, Mary Poppins.
Blimey, Mary Poppins.
There's an iceberg. Whoever that was, I don't know who, it's not a great part.
No.
But it was a really poor London accent.
He was called something like Bert Goodbloke, wasn't he?
Forrest Whitaker hasn't got a good London accent.
No, Forrest Whitaker in The Crying Game, he hasn't got a good London accent. He can't bowl. He looks silly in cricketing whites. And
but he's a good actor.
Other than that, he was great as Idi Amin.
On the subject of NAF, and this is from courtesy of Wikipedia,
yep,
who still, I think our Wittertainment thing is still down at the moment because they're still reviewing
disqualified.
It. A general curse word, which gained widespread usage in the 1970s when the word was used in the TV series Porridge.
There you go.
In order to get around television censorship at the time. Yeah. It was almost famously attributed to being used by Princess Anne towards press photographers.
Naff off.
The first gained usage amongst those of the gay subculture in London was in the 50s.
We're into the naked oily wrestling.
In the 50s and 60s when it was used as a dismissive term towards heterosexuals and is believed to be an acronym, which we will not go into.
Listeners are invited,
but others,
to...
No, they're not. No, they're absolutely not. But the astute listener might work out that actually it's a backronym and not an acronym. More later.
The first test.
He bowls short and he hits it away in the air. It could be quarter, it could be six. It's six.
England versus New Zealand.
He's out! He's given out leg before wicket.
And somehow New Zealand scramble a leg by of the final ball of the match.
Full commentary Tuesday from 9:30 p.m. Live and exclusive digitally on 5 Live Sports Extra. To find out how to receive 5 Live Sports Extra, go online bbc.co.uk/5live.
And Surya says, saw the preview of the bank job on Valentine's Day. I was expecting a real turkey, but I was entertained and I actually enjoyed the movie, something probably to do with low expectations and the possibility that this really happened. Of course, it had lots of shortcomings, especially in the acting department and dialogue. Jason Statham was lousy and can rival with Richard Gere for having just two facial expressions, but overall worth a watch.
Richard Gere hasn't got two.
If you've got nothing better to do, put that on the poster.
Yeah. If you're not busy.
Eamon, this is just on the subject of the guy whose father has only been to see one film in 44 years, and that's Crocodile Dundee. He says, whatever that man sends his father to see, please don't make it Crocodile Dundee 2.
Oh, yeah,
I worked at the cinema at the time, saw it about 50 times. It's so bad that not only could I repeat every line, but I could effectively repeat the exact pauses. It was so depressing in the end that I used to give myself cramp just to pass the time. which is good. And this from Tracy Anna Courtnell. How come Simon has a really nice comfy chair? There's another webcam
viewer.
Yeah,
good.
A nice big comfy chair, and poor old Mark has a cheap $29.99 bank breaker. Mm. That might explain why he's always grumpy.
I'm not grumpy. I'm in a very good mood.
Another webcam viewer saying, how come there are so many coffee cups just distributed casually around?
Because I never go anywhere without distributing coffee cups casually around.
And some of them are left over from the phone-in this morning.
That may be the case, but, you know.
That's the answer. Yeah. Is there anything else we should be watching?
Yeah, now, you know, as I was saying, that thing about lowered expectations. So the bank job, any other week, you go rubbish, you know, just don't even talk. But now, look what else is out this week. Noah at the Wedding, the latest from Noah Baumbach. Margot at the Wedding, Noah at the Wedding. He was the guy who made the Squid and the Whale. And the Squid and the Whale I really didn't like at all. Everybody loved it. Everybody else loved it. It was a sort of semi-autobiographical story of kids and parents, and the parents being horrible and the parents falling apart, and the parents are sort of navel-gazing, narcissistic, horrible publishing types from New York. And I really didn't like them, and I really didn't care what happened to them. And everyone said, oh, it's a great independent movie. And I thought, oh, hate these people, don't care. Now comes Margot at the Wedding, which actually makes me think The Squid and the Whale is about the most lovely people in the world. Margot at the Wedding, new one from Noah Baumbach, and the story is Nicole Kidman and Jennifer Jason Leigh are incredibly narcissistic, navel-gazing, you know, up themselves, intellectual horrors. Margot is coming to the wedding of her sister, who is going to get married to Jack Black, which is obviously a very, very bad idea, and Margot is brought along with her 12-year-old son, who is kind of standing in, I suppose, for the author, and suffering, and watching these hideous, horrible, hideous, ghastly, horrible, hideous people be horrible, hideous, and ghastly to each other. Here's a typical clip.
Is it hideous and
ghastly?
All
crowded?
Of those things.
I don't know. I don't think she knows anyone anymore. She's only known this guy a year.
Is that short?
Would you marry someone you'd only known a year? I can't say I have a lot of hope for the whole thing.
Why are we going then?
We're supporting her.
I thought she wasn't speaking to you.
No.
No.
I wasn't speaking to her, but I'm over it.
I'm never getting married.
The tagline is one family, infinite degrees of separation. And I have with what I like to call this the closer problem. The thing with closer was, you know, I just loathed those characters. I didn't care what happened to them. I just wished they'd all shut up and go away. And I've kind of felt the same way about The Squid and the Whale, but I've never felt it quite so strongly. I was coming out in hives in Margot at the Wedding. I was literally just, you know...
You weren't literally coming out in hives.
I was literally getting skin complaints. I mean, literally getting a skin complaint as a result. I was getting this kind of... really strange rashy thing on my arm.
It was the
like
film.
Yeah, it was like the, you know, in Scanners, your skin starts to sort of bubble. I mean, I'm not making this up. I was literally starting to get some kind of anxiety rash on the back of my arm about being in the same cinema as these people. Now, a great filmmaker can take any characters at all and put them in front of you and make them kind of interesting. And I would give you an example, which is if you look at Will Ferrell is in a Woody Allen film, and Woody Allen can make his characters sometimes quite interesting, get away with it. In the case of this, it's just like these people are ghastly. I don't care what happens to them. Jack Black is, you know, completely miscast. Nicole Kidman thinks she's being really, really brave and really, really difficult, but she's just being really, really difficult and annoying. And I'm meant to find these people in some way intriguing and fascinating and funny and satirical, but all I want to happen is I want Rambo to break out of Screen 3 and come in and sort out their problems with a rocket launcher. It's the kind of movie, it's independently spirited. And whenever I see a movie that's this independently spirited, I want Joel Silver, who's the producer of things like The Matrix, to go, I'm sorry, now what we're going to do is they're going to have a scene in which they all get together, they go to a strip club, there's a huge fight, after which there's a car chase and somebody shoots down a helicopter with a rocket launcher, and if you don't do that, we can't carry on with the rest of the movie. The other thing is that with all these indie... Oh, and also it looks rubbish. Of course, in that kind of 70s way, it's all washed out. It all looks like tea-stained. All the scenes look like they're badly thrown together by somebody who doesn't really care that much.
Why was it tea-stained in the 70s?
You know, because that kind of that strange brown, murky
brown.
Wash.
Burton's brown.
Burton's brown.
Burton's brown.
Is that what it's referred to?
That was my first Saturday job. Everything was brown.
Brown. Okay, so it all looks like that. It looks like those miserable Saturday afternoons that you had back then. And there's a thing which is out in the garden. This wedding's going to happen. And there's a marquee and there's a tree and the tree is rotten, right? Now, in a mainstream Hollywood movie, the indication of the fact that the marriage was stuffed would be that the tree would fall down on the marquee. But it's an independent movie, so obviously that's not going to happen. You know what? It does. And at the point that the tree falls down the marquee, so I don't believe this. I've been here for 90 minutes with you pulling this independent stuff from me. Look how independent we are. Look how annoying these people are, not going to make any effort to make them interesting, not going to do anything, and then the tree falls down. It's like, no, you can't have it both ways. You want to make a Frank Oz movie with the tree falling down at the end, fine. At least give me the stuff before I get there. Don't make me sit through this tortuous, you know, sub-ironic, sub-Bergman-esque tosh and then have the tree fall down on the marquee. It was a tough thing for me that ended up in a skin complaint. And it's not the worst film of the week.
I'm not sure. I'm intrigued by the idea that just watching a movie can actually bring you out.
It brought me out in a rash on the back of my arm.
This isn't metaphorical.
No, a real rash.
You hadn't drunk something you shouldn't have?
What,
peanuts or something?
I love peanuts.
But it might be that. It might be your kids might have given you a germ. The usherette might have given you the lurgy.
Or, Simon, the film might have actually brought me out in a rash.
If anyone has can top that, who has actually been made physically, I don't mean physically, I don't mean sick, because no, you can see someone can might make sick, yeah. Anyone, yeah, of course, anyone.
I was sitting there in the cinema going like this.
Most bizarre.
Okay.
This from Simon in Nottingham. Can you tell His Eminence that his favourite bug was finally released on DVD this week?
I know it was, yeah.
So after watching it on Monday, I decided to hone my Olympic standard podcasting skills and revisit the review from last year. I found myself agreeing with The Good Doctor. Great acting, interesting film. Certainly the stagey comment held, which to my mind was highlighted by the fact that the film consisted of just 5 thespians. Not one for the faint-hearted or those with phobias of the orthodontology variety. But thanks to The Good Doctor, otherwise this little gem would have passed me by.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely film. And it was not lovely, it's a horrible film, but that's what's so great about it.
Is it lovely or horrible?
No, it's horrible in a really lovely way. It's really deeply depraved and twisted and weird, and it's the work of a much younger man than Friedkin is. And incidentally, the same week they re-released Cruising in a remastered, not entirely uncut, but in a remastered form. And I saw that again when I was in Cannes. I love Cruising. I think it's great. It's one of those films with really, really raw edges. That kind of filmmaking that you're just not allowed to do anymore.
You rather dangerously said we haven't even got to the worst film of the week. It's
no.
been pretty poor.
Yeah.
Is it the worst week ever?
It's after, you remember a couple of weeks ago.
I quite enjoy bad weeks, though.
Is this the best week ever? So now we have The Accidental Husband. Okay, brace yourself. It's a lovable rom-com from Griffin Dunne, who is one of the two guys in American Werewolf in London. And then subsequently he went on to direct Practical Magic, which was quite good, and Addicted to Love, which was quite terrible. And he's now teaming up with the majestic acting talents of Miss Irma Theakston. Now, Irma Theakston is wonderful because Irma Theakston is the person who makes Ikea Knightley look like Dame Judi Dench when it comes to sort of thespian range. I mean, Irma can, it's not just that she can't act. Irma Theakston can barely speak. You ever, there's a goon show thing in which Harry Secombe says he was the closest I've ever seen to a human being without actually being one. And in the case of Irma, that's how it works out. Now, in this film, Irma is a radio DJ. She's a disc jockey, Simon, and she's a disc jockey giving out romantic advice to listeners. And I think you should listen to this fantastic clip of her being a radio, which a disc jockey probably have to play discs. She's a talk show host.
All right.
Love is supposed to nourish you.
No, I'm just saying, I want the fairy tale. I want the excitement, the romance, you know?
Yeah, I do. This Prince Charming of yours doesn't exist. I mean, he's probably good for a few nights in this act, but then his charm will run pretty thin, which is what charm does.
Well, I hear you, Dr. Light, but what I'm saying is that I want to be deeply and passionately in love.
Oh, you want to be passionately in love. I see, yeah. Well, you know who's a bigger flake than your buddy Prince Charming? His brother, Prince Passion. Risa, if you are truly serious about wanting to find real and lasting love in this town, I'm going to have to dish out a little tough love to you right now.
Uh-oh.
This serial dating of yours is a waste of time. I mean, you can't find something when you don't know what you're looking for. You're playing the field, right? Hoping that somebody will want you. When it's you who needs to
That's
figure
enough.
Out...
That's enough. Stop. Now, tell me that you're not coming out in a rash on the back of your arm.
I'm not coming out in a rash.
Part of you starting to feel slightly physically uncomfortable?
No, not really, because I was thinking, well, you know, that's really... Because I remember going to see Good Morning Vietnam and thinking Robin Williams as a... Robin Williams was extremely funny, thinking...
Robin Williams.
Never be that good, I'm just going to give up straight away. But I listened to that and thinking, yes, I can be.
Well, look, there's a Dolly Parton movie called Straight Talk, in which Dolly Parton basically does the same role, and she's really good, because I like Dolly Parton, and she's got James Woods in it. And I mean, it's not incredibly convincing, but compared to that, the Dolly Parton story,
by the way.
Can you do it quickly?
No, I can't.
Okay, fine, tell me afterwards. The best Dolly Parton line is, it takes a lot of money to look this cheap.
It's much, much better than that.
Okay, fine. I know it's my own hair. I've still got the receipts.
Much better than that.
So, anyway, several problems with this. Let's do them. Firstly, Uma Thixon can't act, can't play a radio host. I mean, it's very, very easy to sit with headphones on talking to a microphone because, you know, if you're mocking it up, the director just talks to you on the headphones. Oh, it's very difficult. Sorry. Well, she can't do it. You know, it's like she can't do brain surgery. She can't do that. And what happens is she gives the advice to somebody that they should leave their boyfriend, right? And he then, in order to get back at her, she's about to get married to Colin Firth. He then arranges for a marriage certificate between him and her so that she then can't get married because she's already married to him. And then they have to get the marriage annulled. And then, of course, whilst they're doing that, they fall in love. So it's like green card, although it's not like green card. It's like, what's the footballing thing? Yellow card, red card, off you go. Early bath for you, Cantona. It's like that, right?
Amazed you've heard of a footballer.
Well, you know, I'm in the studio with you. Some of it kind of rubs off. Right, second point is that there is this weird thing now with firemen in movies. movies. If fireman in movies has become the universal get out of jail free card. Okay, if your movie is rubbish, if it's falling apart, if nothing's working, put in a New York fireman, because that is like no one is allowed to not be charmed by the New York fireman. Because ever since, you know, the terrible events of 8 years ago, in Hollywood shorthand, that has become the shorthand for the heroic character who we must all fall in love with. So Irma Thiekson falls in love with the totally unlovable New York fireman, and that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but we have to believe it is because it's a New York fireman. Meanwhile, Colin Firth's character has so little to do that they give him an eating disorder. The eating disorder being that whenever he's tense, he stuffs his face with food. So in every single scene, he's stuffing his face with food. And I figured out halfway through the reason he's doing it is because the dialogue is so ghastly, he would rather have his mouth absolutely stuffed with food, so you can't hear him attempting to do the dialogue. Laugh-free, unconvincing, terrible plotting, badly directed. Irma, the only things Irma is any good in at all is in the Quentin Tarantino films, because Quentin Tarantino doesn't write dialogue for human beings. He writes dialogue for Quentin Tarantino and for Irma, are you enjoying your stay on our planet, Thiekston?
Is that it?
No, I mean, there's worse films out this week. I mean, you know, there's...
No. Okay, well, what's worse than that?
The Baker, that's even worse. Then there's Untraceable, which is nothing... Believe me, I'm just
movie
beginning the descent.
Movie of the week.
Shockingly enough, it's The Bank Job. And Jason, please don't put that on the poster, because it's only because it's such a vile week.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.